Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dads on the Fly podcast. I'm Caleb Simmons.
And I'm Joshua Simmons. We are two brothers who love fly fishing, our families, and are men of faith. But like most of you listening, we're still not experts on any of those subjects.
So our hope is to speak with as many people that we believe are experts on these subjects and pose the questions that most of us are asking.
So thanks for joining us along the journey as we seek to inspire and encourage dads and anglers as we wade through fishing, fatherhood, and faith on the fly.
I'm as happy catching a 12-inch smallie as I am a 22-inch smallie as far as looking at the entire day and whether or not I had a good day, because it really is just about being out there and kind of unwinding, which is the other aspect of it. Man, for me, it just gives me a great deal of peace. And so I think in order to get there, you've got to get past, you know, either I've got to catch a 23-inch smallie, which everybody's chasing, you know, in the rivers, if you will, and just, you know, kind of taking the experience. It really is about the experience.
That was Mr. Al White coming up on today's episode of the Dads on the Fly podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 116 of the Dads on the Fly podcast. I am Caleb Simmons, as always, in the studio with my brother Joshua Simmons. Joshua, what's up, man?
Not much, man. I'm a little under the weather, so sorry for those. This may not sound real great for the intro, but when we recorded the episode for today, I was much better, so it'll be a lot better off.
It's good, man. Yeah, there's a bunch of sickness going on right now. My wife's pretty laid up. It's been a fun time this weekend in my household, trying to run around and do all the things. And let me just say, I'm grateful for my wife because she's amazing and gets a lot done. And when it's all on me, it is not fun.
Yeah, you made some flowers, didn't you?
Dude, I've been like doing all the floor stuff. I've been delivering flowers. I've been just running all over the place.
Your resume's so, just piling up.
Just piling up. So yeah, I got plenty of odd jobs I could do if, you know, for some reason the ministry thing never works out. But
there you go. We've got a happy Thanksgiving. Want to quickly say happy Thanksgiving to everybody this week. Hope you're getting to spend some time with your family. Hope you're getting to spend some time with those that you love the most. I know we're going to get to do that. And maybe if you can squeeze in some time on the water, it's just a bonus.
Absolutely.
We've not fished much since our most recent adventure, but maybe we'll get out some this weekend. But today we got a cool episode, man. We have really somebody I found on Instagram who just has a really cool Instagram vibe. And it was cool to talk to him because he catches a lot of smallmouth, a lot of warm water fish. And he had a really cool story, and so I think that everybody's going to really enjoy this one from Indiana with our man, Mr. Al White.
Yeah, man, Albert White, he's a cool guy. I think you say this in the episode, actually, but his kind of Instagram bio says, father of three great kids, avid runner who also loves to fly fish, drink good bourbon, and hone his skills as a voiceover actor. So we learn a little bit more about that, and he's just a cool guy, man, and I think he's got a great story. And we talked about this not too long ago. You know, we've had the opportunity to have some really big names in the fly fishing industry on this episode, but I think sometimes some of my favorite conversations are with the guys who are just like us. They're just weekend warriors trying to get out on the water as much as they can, and trying to be good dads and good family men. And so this is a fun episode for me. I love hearing Al's passion for smallmouth and just why he loves fly fishing so much. He really dives into what it's done for him and for how it's benefited his life, not just in the fun that he's had doing it, but how it's actually been really beneficial for him. So I really enjoy this episode.
Yeah, man. I'm still on a high from last weekend. I kind of was all week, and I'm even more excited because of some things we've seen from that project. So if you're not following Dads on the Fly or Jesse Mills at Backwater Fly Fishing, you have about, I don't know, a couple months to do that.
Yeah, I mean, let's go ahead and start reminding folks about that. If you're not following us on Instagram or on the social media channels that we are on, we would love for you to do that. We love to connect with you there. That's our favorite place to connect with other dads on the fly, is to be able to talk with them and hear from them. And you guys sharing your stories. Every time we hear from a person who listens to this show, it just thrills our souls to know that people are listening, first of all, and then two, that it's having a positive impact on your lives. So we appreciate all the messages that we continue to get. We've got some great ones over the past several weeks, which I'm really grateful for. And as we come into this season of Thanksgiving, just want to say I'm thankful for every one of you who are listening to this episode today. I'm thankful for the fact that you listen in every week and you keep us going as we continue to try to do this thing to help inspire and encourage dads and anglers.
Man, that was really solid. That was well done right off the cuff there.
Totally off the top.
I did want to remind people we do have some camo hats for sale.
Yeah, so coming up, it is,
shopping time.
Shopping Christmas. Time for Christmas. And so if you've got someone in your life you want to buy a Dads on the Fly hat for, or if you need a Dads on the Fly hat, this is a great thing to send to a loved one and remind them and say, hey, I love this merch, love this gear, and have them shoot us a message and we'll get a hat sent your way. You can see them, best place to see all that's on our social media channel. So again, on Instagram or Facebook, you can see all that stuff there, and we can share the link there to where you can purchase a Dads on the Fly hat as well.
Rock and roll, episode 116. Let's fire it up.
Yeah, man, let's fire it up. We really love this conversation with Al White, and I really appreciate him spending some time with us, and we hope you guys enjoy it too. So we'll dive into our conversation with Al White after a few words from our sponsors. Dads on the Fly is brought to you by Trout Routes. Joshua, I love the Trout Routes app, and it has become an amazing tool that helps us to find more trout to catch whenever we go on any of our adventures together.
Just exploring new water is what makes Trout Routes great, and these guys are always making the app better. Something is added every day, a new feature. They've just added the Street View feature, which you've got to check out. Click on the orange dot, hit Street View, you can see what the trout stream looks like there. So I can't tell you enough about how cool Trout Routes is when you're out looking for new water.
Man, that's a game changer for us, Joshua. Being able to see these locations where you want to try to access these rivers, I mean, it's going to be great. So I'm stoked to continue to use the Trout Routes app. We encourage everybody, go wherever you get your apps, download the Trout Routes app. They will be the best tool to help you find more trout to catch.
Hey, Caleb, one thing we've done recently is so much smallie fishing. And so much smallie fishing means we're on our raft. And when you hook into that big smallie, man, you want to get that sucker in a net. And we have chosen, and we are so happy to have Dads on the Fly brought to you by Ketchcam Nets.
Yeah, Joshua, Ketchcam Nets are amazing. The cool thing that I love about Ketchcam Nets is they allow you to design and build your own net. So for whatever type of fishing you're doing, to customize it with certain logos or different, they got rulers on the net handles, all these amazing things that just make your fishing experience better. So we encourage everybody, if you're looking and if you're in the market for a net, check them out at ketchcamnets.com.
And the best thing about it is if you are a small water fisher, if you are a big water fisher, whatever fish you're chasing, they have a net for you. So please reach out to Bo and Steven over at Ketchcam Nets, and they will build your custom net today. All right, so we want to welcome to the Dads on the Fly podcast someone that I kind of found on Instagram through messaging. I'm not really sure how our Instagram channels cross paths, but man, he posts a lot of really cool smallie pictures that I want to talk about in this episode. And he also has a really cool job I want to dive into at some point, at least in my opinion. I think it's a cool job. So Mr. Al White, thanks, man, for joining the Dads on the Fly podcast.
Yeah, no, thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of humbled to be a guest after seeing some of the folks that you've had on your podcast. So I'm incredibly appreciative. And also congratulations to you guys on having a successful podcast. That is not an easy task by any means. So big shout out to you guys.
As you can tell, it has everything to do with our wonderful technology and professional that we started the day with, just trying to get connected here. So you can tell where it all comes from.
That's
but
right.
Al White is, according to his Instagram profile, is a father of three great kids, an avid runner who loves to fly fish, drink good bourbon, and hone his skills as a voiceover actor. What a great tag. So let's just start with the fly fishing part. When's the first time, Al, that maybe you got a fly rod in your hand? I think you live in Indiana, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, I live just outside of Indianapolis. The first time that I got a fly fishing rod in my hand, I would say it had to be, I went to, I've got a good friend. We've become friends. I coached his daughter in soccer. I coached kind of rec soccer for years with a really good friend of mine. And anyway, we happened to become friends with this family. They had a place out in Montana, just outside of Big Sky, or actually in Big Sky. And he invited me out. He knew I was an avid, you know, angler. And at that time, it was pretty much all conventional. And lo and behold, he sets up two guided trips. One was wading the Gallatin. And then the other, the next day, we were floating the Madison. And for me, you know, I had no idea. These are like, you know, bucket list rivers for many yeah, fly for sure. anglers, right? And so, you know, that was my first introduction. And I just thought it was cool as all get out. And I've got a good friend here in Indianapolis, or actually in Indiana, who is a guide himself, Chad Miller. And I started, you know, fishing with him, but I was, again, doing conventional, but I was a pond hopper, right? And so I wanted to cover more water. You know, I just knew I loved this sport. I wanted to cover more water. And a friend turned me on to Chad. And, you know, he still reminds me to this day. He goes, after probably a couple of trips of conventional fly fishing conventional fishing for smallies, he probably actually put a fly rod in my hand. I probably tried it once or twice. So that was technically probably the first time. But he still reminds me of the day when he said, you know, Al, you're probably going to fly fish. And I said, Chad, you know, I really just don't see myself doing that. And, you know, here I am, you know, that was, you know, a couple of years later after that discussion. And, I gave all my conventional gear away with the exception of probably 2 to 3 rods to a couple of, brothers, young guys in my girlfriend's neighborhood. And, I've now got, I don't know, 8 to 10 rods probably, you know, and equally the same number of reels and all the gear you could think of. And I've just jumped in with 2 feet. I just absolutely love the sport and, you know, what it's done for me.
It's addictive, right? I mean, it's crazy how you can quickly jump ship from what you've known your whole life when you find something like fly fishing.
Nah, it really is. And I think... You know, I try to describe to people because I'm probably a huge advocate of the sport. And, you know, I tell folks it gives me perspective. It gives me balance in my life, as well as it teaches me a great deal of patience, to be honest with you. So for me, and I think when you and I were going back and forth, or which I'm not sure which one of you it was when we were messaging, in a lot of ways, it's kind of, you know, changed my life, really improved it is what I would say.
So, you know, Indiana, a little outside of Indianapolis.
Yeah, yeah.
Known for maybe what you would, you know, probably not in your top 10 destinations of fly fishing. But if you look at your Instagram posts a lot,
yeah.
It has a lot of warm water fish.
Absolutely.
Well, and you got some panfish in there, which we love. You know, my kid loves catching panfish.
Right.
Gateway drug.
Gateway drug, we like to call it. But what is it that you found? I want to go down this rabbit hole for mm-hmm. just a minute. You catch some really nice smallmouth. Or at least you post some pictures.
That's exactly right.
I assume you catch them. But so what is it about those fish? We kind of went down that. Me and Caleb got really on those fish this last couple of years, and we're still wanting to get on them more. But what is it about the smallmouth, man, that you just love?
A couple of things. You know, one, they're to me, they're a beautiful fish, right? And I started, again, pretty much on largemouth bass, hopping ponds. And now you've got this smallmouth that I was turned on to. They're in moving water, which absolutely I love, but they're fighters, right? I mean, you know, of kind of the warm water species, if you will, they're some of the best fighters pound for pound out there. And I just absolutely love that. The action that you get on those topwater explosions, right? And then they're just coming out of the water, breaching. There's nothing better to me, right? That's what gets me going. So I love smallmouth. And if you ever get to fish with somebody like Chad, you know, it gives you the history of the native smallmouth in Indiana and like a fishery like Sugar Creek. And so there's that history there too that I love as well.
Man, just to hear you talk about it, Al, you know, you talk about that fight. I mean, it gets me excited just thinking about it. I start getting pumped up. It's something we definitely found over the past couple of summers. We're major trout bums ourselves.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We have really fallen in love with the smallmouth in this area. And it's a great game fish. It's something that's a blast to catch.
Do you find yourself catching smallmouth year-round? I know it gets maybe a little chilly in the winter, but that's something we've tried to kind of think about maybe more. We mainly did it in the summer, late fall, maybe early spring. But part of me wants to know if I can – I may be a slower day this winter, but part of me wants to see if I can – Caleb and I can maybe get on a couple winter smallmouth.
Yeah.
Do you do that?
I personally don't. I do not enjoy fishing in what I would call kind of the extreme cold. So for me, that's probably anything about less than 45 degrees. I just don't enjoy it. I also think it becomes a little bit hard with smallmouth, right? Because they start to kind of not start. They are in their winter holes by that point in time. So there's a piece of it. Number one, you got to find them. And then I think you've got to fish it, you know, completely different. You've got to slow it down. Frankly, you're probably better off going the conventional method. Some people may disagree with me. I think you'd have much better luck. But I mean, honestly, I went out for a little bit today to get myself get my head right for this podcast, and right. And I think I caught a nice smallie. I actually caught a carp too, throwing a streamer. But it might be my last smallie of the season, depending on what the weather does. But it was a nice one, which I will post later this week.
Nothing thrills my soul more to know that somebody went fishing to prep for this podcast. Like, we gave somebody an excuse to go fishing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that's awesome. I mean, that's been the coolest part of 2 years of this podcast. It's like, oh, we got to go fishing. We need some content.
Right.
Or, wait, we got to, you know, take somebody fishing because they're going to be on the show. Or that no matter whatever happens, we've said.
Yeah, man.
This has always been the best part of the podcast.
Yeah, you guys are living the dream. We all want to be like you guys. Are you kidding me? Shoot.
I don't know about that. Say that. I haven't fished yet. Yeah. Don't want to know if you know what I was doing tonight and today. Most people would not say dream was a chase.
Well, I know one of you are teachers, right?
I've moved into administration, so yeah, it's a full-time.
Well,
all over the place.
Yeah, let me say this. I have a great appreciation for teachers. My mother was a school teacher for 30-something years, retired now, obviously. But it's one of the most important jobs that we have out there.
For sure.
Appreciate you saying that.
Well, Al, so you talked a little bit about it when you talked about kind of your initiation of fly fishing, of what it's done for you. You said you've provided a lot of balance. I'd love for you, if you don't mind, going a little bit further into that. How has it been such a beneficial aspect of your life?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. As you get older, you like to think you get wiser and stuff like that. And I think for me, so one of the first things I noticed when I started to fly fish, and what really separated it from conventional fishing is that now all of a sudden you're in this element, right, in this moving water. And there's just something, number one, about the moving water that kind of captures you. But as you really begin to take a step back and look at it all together, you realize that there's a lot of life going on around you. And so what I mean by that, and this is where I get the perspective from, you know, the smallest insect, whatever it may be, you know, that's crawling around on a piece of wood or on a rock or whatever, a crawfish, to seeing the largest, you know, kind of apex predator in the sky being the bald eagle, to seeing deer. Like today, I saw a deer, you know, come up on the riverbank, right, to get some water. And so you start to take that in to say, man, you know, it isn't all about me. There's a lot more going on out here, right, that we need to appreciate and, frankly, protect that ecosystem as well. So that's been one of the things for me, is to just to truly gain that kind of perspective of everything that's going on around you.
How long did that, I know for me that took a little while. So when I first started fly fishing, it was like, I got to catch fish. Like I want to feel this tug every day. I want my rod bent over. But you know, I'm to that point now. It's really crazy. The other day we went and I mean, I wanted to catch a couple native rookies cause it was fall and that's when I love to catch them. They're all colored up, but
yeah,
you know, the second half of the day, I didn't touch a rod. My kid casted the whole day and I just netted fish, and that's just kind of where I am at this point. Like I love to just net fish and put people on fish. And how long that took me some time, I will say. How long did that take you, man, until you could just really enjoy and not have to? I'm so ultra competitive. I started just wanting to catch fish. But
yeah, no, I'm with you. You know, when I reflect back on, you know, the 3 or 4 years that I've become kind of hardcore, early on, it was all about catching fish, right? There's no doubt about it. And frankly, it was about catching, you know, the largest fish that I could. And so I'd say it's been probably about the last 2 years that I've really come to have that kind of appreciation or perspective, if you will. And frankly, I'm still a guy that chases, you know, a large fish. I'm more about quality than I ever am quantity. But, you know, as a guide once said, you know, take what the river gives you. And so for me, honestly, you know, I'm as happy catching a 12-inch smallie as I am a 22-inch smallie as far as looking at the entire day and whether or not I had a good day, because it really is just about being out there and kind of unwinding, which is the other aspect of it, man. For me, it just gives me a great deal of peace. And so I think in order to get there, you've got to get past, you know, either I've got to catch a 23-inch smallie, which everybody's chasing, you know, in the rivers, if you will. And just, you know, kind of taking the experience. It really is about the experience.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you were speaking about it, just being in that moving water.
Yes.
There's actually been a ton of, I've been reading up on this a lot lately. There's been a ton of brain science around that. Just the amount of, like they've done a lot of experiments with people and like talked about the fact that like being around moving water for like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
A day is like apparently like equal to, you know.
Yeah.
Wonder all this crazy stuff to
how
where
do you volunteer for those experiments?
I don't know. That'd be great.
Exactly. I'm with you.
Yeah, but I mean, they've scientifically proven a lot of that just being around moving water is so good for your just like that self care and mental health.
Yeah, yeah, your well being, right?
Yeah, your overall well being for sure. And so I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, I think that's what turned me on to fly fishing, keeps me going all the time, is seeing what it does, not just for the excitement of catching the 23-incher. Which still hasn't happened yet, but it's going to, and the smallie that is, you know, I mean, it's the reason we keep coming back,
right?
We see the positive effect that it has on our lives more than just the actual just fun of it all.
Absolutely, no doubt. For me, I think about it and say, man, I just wish that I would have picked this sport up, you know, 20 years ago instead of, you know, just 3 or 4 years ago for fly fishing, and maybe another 3 before that for conventional. I did some fishing prior to then, you know, I had all these kind of, I was thinking about it in preparation for this, just these different experiences throughout my life that, you know, allowed me to fish from time to time, but never did I imagine in my wildest dreams that I'd, you know, be traveling to different places and stuff like that, and just kind of totally immerse myself in the sport.
Yeah, it's people don't understand that aren't like us that, you know, when you start looking at where work's going to take you, if you're traveling for work or for vacations, or all of a sudden you're not really looking at restaurants anymore or like where you're going to go to hang. You just look at like what body of water's there.
Exactly.
It totally takes over your thought process. You plan trips around it, family reunions, whatever, wherever somebody is, you're like, well, there's bound to be something I can target there that maybe I haven't yet.
It's so true. If people could see me, I'm smiling because you're speaking the truth. I mean, that's the way I look at planning for a vacation, whether I'm going back home on the East Coast to see my mother or my brother down in Florida, or taking the kids, you know, on a trip or whatever, I do try to figure out where can I get some fishing in while I'm there.
Yeah. I mean, when I was younger, it used to be like, wonder what maybe college football stadium I could go visit or what arena I could see. And now it's like, well, oh, we're going here. Okay. Well, there's this fish, or I just start going.
Gotta be something to target.
Right. Right.
Like something.
Absolutely.
Just change it. So before we jump off the Smalley train, I got one more question. Do you have a certain maybe pattern that you love to, maybe your two favorite patterns, maybe a topwater and a subsurface pattern that you just love?
Now, I'm going to be honest with you. My two favorite are both topwater, but they're different. But I do fish, you know, a streamer like today. I love the Matt Lachey minnow that has just been just a winner for me when I'm throwing streamers. I have a lot of confidence in it, and I catch fish with it. Now, my two favorites. Top water. So as we start to get into kind of probably that May, definitely June timeframe, right? So as we start to get more heat units throughout the day, that water warms up. I'm going with a boogle bug popper, and man, I'll fish that thing into July, mid to late July, and then I start to move into the kind of terrestrial patterns, if you will, right? And I've got a buddy who makes it kind of looks like a fat Albert, if you will, no pun intended. but man, I tell you, there's nothing better than, you know, throwing one of those and just letting it drift, right, in a slow current, because that's the time where now you're talking about slow and low water, especially as you get into August and September. And then all of a sudden, you know, if it's a little guy, sometimes they'll bust it and, you know, scare the crap out of you. But those big fish, they just sip it. And you know, it never fails that you turn your head for a second. And then all of a sudden, you know, your line's tight, you know, the fly is gone. I mean, and it is just the coolest thing to see. I've been able a time or two to capture some of that on video. And for me, there's nothing like it. So it's the boogle bug, and then, you know, that kind of terrestrial pattern as we get into the late summer months.
Yeah, it's that crazy toilet bowl effect, right?
There you go.
Just inhale it, and, you know, you just looks like this vortex.
Yep.
You just went into the water. It's just wild to see that. You got to so your boogle bug, is it the black? Is it it's chartreuse? What color we got?
Yeah, I use black, blue, and then I believe it's kind of a mossy green to me. I don't know what the exact color is, but I almost solely use those three. And if I could, I've just got to tell you guys this. So one of my first real trips, you know, Chad, we've become good friends, so I reference him a good bit, because honestly, I wouldn't be where I am as far as a fly angler, if you will, without the help and really honestly kind of mentorship of Chad. But he said, look, if you really want to get good at fly fishing, you got to put down your conventional gear. And so we're on Sugar Creek and we're floating, you know, and I'm just throwing the line, right? And it's at the, you know, I'm not good at casting at this point in time. I'm just okay. And we had, like, probably within the first 30 minutes, I think we caught like a nice 18, and then it kind of got dead or went dead on us. And so I'm just making a mess right now, my cast. And Chad's like, you know, just give me the rod for a second. I said, hold on, let me just make one more cast. And we throw it, and I'm throwing a popper. And all of a sudden, fight is on. I mean, and a 22-incher, and I've got it out on Instagram. I still have a video of Chad just takes that thing and takes us for a ride, and we bring it in. But, you know, for a guy who, on really my first fly fishing trip for smallmouth, catches a 22-incher, it was at that point in time that I stopped measuring fish, because I said nothing else is going to measure up to that moment. But that's one of those, you know, experiences or moments that I will not forget.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if I'd have caught a 22-incher my first time out, I mean, it'd be even worse than this now. So, yeah, for sure. I've been chasing them for 2 years
living
now,
right.
Still haven't gotten there yet. So Al, when you're chasing smallies the majority of the time, are you floating?
No. Honestly, so I probably, so I'll float with a guy, and typically, honestly, it's Chad on Sugar Creek. I just think it's one of the prettiest bodies of river out there. So as far as I'm concerned, Central Indiana should be a destination for folks to come and fly fish. But normally, anymore, I'm waiting. I just love to wade, yeah. Right? I mean, there are times where I get that thirst for wanting to cover some more water, maybe when things get a little bit slow. But wading is, honestly, it's a bit more efficient when you don't have that much time. Obviously, a float, you know, typically takes an entire day. I will say this. I sold my kayak. I used to have one of those kind of kitted out kayaks for my conventional gear. You know, I had the whole thing, and I ended up buying a Smith fly paddle board for fly fishing. And I'll tell you what, that's a pretty cool experience. And I try to get that thing out at least 2 to 3 times during the summer. I should be doing it more. But again, the wading, it can just be so much more efficient, you know, when you're talking about time. And frankly, I enjoy just being out there having, you know, my body in the water, if you will. You know what I mean? It's like it gets back to that research you were talking about.
Yeah. So, you know, the only time we've really ever chased smallies is actually floating in a raft. So, you know, we've not really waited a lot for smallies, weighed a ton for trout. And so just curious, you know, to get your expertise on this. Is it similar to trout fishing when as far as wading? Or are you wading downstream, you wading upstream?
Yeah.
You kind of hanging in the same place for a while. What's kind of your tactic?
Yeah, for me, honestly, it's a little bit of both, and both can be effective, right? But honestly, I haven't done a ton of trout fishing, so it's hard for me to really compare. And I certainly would not use the word expert, you know, with me when we're talking about stocking these small.
You say that, but your pictures say otherwise. I mean, you're catching some hogs, man.
Fair enough. And again, this is, you know, kind of learned. It's all about repetition, right? And just getting out there and fishing. But I have learned to kind of understand what I would call the points where fish have an opportunity to prey on bait, if that makes sense, right? So kind of those spots where you might like have
ambush opportunity.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. That's exactly the word I was looking for. Exactly. Kind of those ambush points. Like today, here's a perfect example. Current's still kind of slow because we haven't had a ton of rain this year, but there was enough of a current moving, and there was this lay down tree that kind of was hollowed in the center, and it just looks like one of those perfect ambush spots. And lo and behold, that's where I caught this nice smallie. That was probably only about a 16 incher, maybe a 17 incher, but you know, just, you could tell I've been feeding this fall, full of weight, just a beautiful fish. But oftentimes I'm looking for a little bit of current. And then depending on what time of year, I may be looking for maybe bigger boulders, but again, anywhere where they have the potential to, ambush, right? Some bait. The lay downs, like I talked about, is another spot, especially when it gets low and slow, you know, they'll look to hide, and man, you drift that fly over that lay down and then just be ready for the fight. So, you know, typically it's scenarios like that. Every now and then I'll get them in fast water, and there are those occasions, but more times than not, it's in, you know, just off maybe the fast water and some slower current. And again, somewhere where they've got a spot to hide and really ambush that prey.
You said something earlier I wanted to circle back to, and this is something we also had spoken via messaging about. But you know, you mentioned that fly fishing has taken you some places.
Yeah.
And one of those you actually mentioned in the conversation, I hope you bring up. And so where are some of those cool places? And I think one of them really kind of stuck out to you. You mentioned to me in an Instagram message.
Yeah, you know, so there's a number of places I've been to, and many more, you know, as I kind of start this journey, because I'm early in the journey, to be honest with you. But there's many more places I want to go. Likely we'll get to South America and chase some Dorado, I think, in 25, thinking about nice. That. I'll definitely go to the Bahamas. I'll probably go to the Bahamas at least once a year until I cannot fly fly fish anymore. I love chasing bones, and we can get into a little bit of, you know, why that. But probably one of the most special places, and it was just about the overall experience, you know, through my work, I've had the opportunity to travel, you know, a bit, and I've been to Africa, the continent of Africa, about four times, I believe, now at this point, and I've been to South Africa several times, but in, I believe it was 23? So I believe it was in 2021, I had the opportunity to take my kids to South Africa, and I got the chance to fish for trout in just this beautiful setting, nestled in between two mountains, was this beautiful stream, clear as all get out, and, you know, catch some wild trout, if you will, outside of Cape Town, which for me was just an absolute awesome experience. Because again, it really is more about the experience than even catching the fish. Obviously, you go that far, you want to catch a fish, but you know, just taking in the scenery. And I mean, we had to hike out of there, which was new to me, something I had not done, as we, you know, we kind of fished upstream. And then all of a sudden he's like, okay, well, we got to get out of here. And now you find yourself, you know, climbing banks, and then we're dropping down, you know, banks as well, and climbing on a ladder to get down to this other area and stuff like that. It was crazy, but it was also a very cool experience. And, you know, as far as the kids go, I think that made it even better. Now they weren't fishing with me. But the fact that I got to take them on a trip like that, we did a safari, in Kruger National Park, which was a first for them. I had been on several, and you know, admittedly we stayed in this really nice lodge, and it's always important for me to try to, you know, provide some perspective, you know, for the kids. So as we stayed in this really nice lodge, as we then made our way over to the Cape, I've got some friends out there who run nonprofits and so forth. So it was important for them to then, you know, visit what some will call either informal or formal, depending on if the government has engaged with those villages, if you will, or kind of shanty towns. But, you know, you're talking about folks that, you know, maybe living in a 20 by 20, you know, home that's made of, you know, metal, sheet metal, and whatever else, you know, they can find wood and stuff like that to put together. Maybe they have electricity, maybe they don't, or only certain times during the day. May not have running water and stuff like that. So, you know, we toured some of those facilities, toured a school. We also made sure that they had an opportunity to feed the folks. And as my friend was telling me, this may be the only like solid meal or full meal that these people get for the day. So, you know, really just being able to provide my kids with that opportunity and that kind of experience is important to me. And it's certainly my goal for us to continue to have more trips like that. I just think it's important, you know, experiences shape us all. And I think we've got to, you know, do that with our children. You know, that obviously helps build character.
Such a cool story. So you also mentioned in that through your work, and I find that your work is very interesting to me. So
I have to say this though. I'm going to, because I have a feeling, because you read my bio, that you probably think I'm like a full time voice actor, right?
Well, I mean, you're doing so. I mean, you have one of the best voices we've had on the show, Caleb. What do you say?
Oh, that's what I was going to say. I mean, by far, this is the best sounding we've ever been.
We should just bring you on more often.
I mean, you can tell you articulate yourself way better. You carry yourself on the mic way better than we do.
But here's the deal. And I thought about this because you guys kept talking about my job. And I'm like, well, how do they know really what I do? And I'm like, shoot, my bio does talk about aspiring voiceover. And I'm truly an aspiring voiceover actor. Now, I've done some gigs and stuff like that. But I actually work for a pharmaceutical company full time. That's where I've got my opportunity to travel. The job has just given me so much, you know, to be thankful for, from, again, like I said, to traveling, to providing for my family, ensuring they've got certainly everything they need and a lot of what they want. And I've kind of grown and developed from there. And that job actually led me to pursue voice acting. What happened was during the George Floyd killing, you know, there was a lot of efforts from companies around racial justice and stuff like that. And we started, you know, doing some different programs, and they asked me to do a voiceover for this program. And I'm like, sure, I'll do it. And much like you guys have talked about, people, you know, tell me I have this voice, and what you find out in voice acting, you need all kinds of voices. So all three of us could be good voice actors at the end of the day. It just depends on what a customer is looking for.
But looking for a rural mountain.
There you go. Absolutely. I can see you, man. Maybe it's a Budweiser, a Chevy, you know, it just depends. But, you know, from there, I decided to pursue it because I thought it could be, you know, kind of a nice post-retirement gig if I just kind of established myself a little bit. I treat it as a hobby today because I really do have a full-time job, but it's fun. And I'll just have to tell you quickly as I got into this. So, you know, I did this program, and I had done a couple of programs for the company. And typically, you know, they're either a little bit more serious, right? Maybe a tad bit jovial. We have something called a Global Day of Service, and I had done some voiceover for that. So there's a little bit more, you know, kind of energy and positive vibe with that one. But as I hired this voice coach, right? So he's a professional voice actor. You guys have heard him on different commercials and stuff like that. And we get in there and he starts talking about, you know, all these different things we're going to be doing. And it could be, you know, you've got to do a, you know, a commercial that's got a humorous side and is very social. And all of a sudden I'm like, well, wait a minute. You know, I just thought I was going to be doing these, you know, kind of serious, you know, programs, but it truly is, or serious commercials. It really is voice acting. And so you've got to be able to do a bit of it all. So like if, you know, somebody were to listen to some of my copies or what I use sometimes for auditions, you know, you'll hear all kinds of, you know, styles, if you will, from voice acting. And so it was like a steep, I say all that to say it was a really steep learning curve for me. When I got into it, it was not at all what I was expecting, and he was tougher than nails, but it helped me a bunch. It's pretty cool, and I actually enjoy it, and I hope to kind of connect my love of fishing with my love of, you know, doing some voice acting, and I'm hoping that I can connect those two. That's the ultimate goal.
Got to get you on some commercials for some of these brands.
I'm telling you.
Exactly.
Making all this fishing gear.
Hey, trust me, I'm right there with you.
There you go. You know, that's what we need to get going for you, for sure.
I appreciate you.
Al, we're going to take just a short break, I think. Caleb's where we're at. And we're just going to do that and come back and talk. You know, the first part of your bio and kind of how we talked is a father of three kids. Yep. And so we'll let you talk a little bit about your kids and what it's like to be a father. And also one other piece that we spoke of off air that we want you to talk about, and you know, getting more minorities in the fly fishing and what that means to you. I know that's something you said was real powerful to you. And so we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break.
Cool.
We want to give a big thank you to a sponsor of this episode, Turtle Box Audio. Joshua, TurtleBox audio speakers, the most rugged, loudest outdoor speaker on the market. We just continue to not be able to say enough great things about these things.
Yeah, if you've heard any of our episodes in the last 2 months, maybe even longer than that, you know how much we love our TurtleBox audio. The other day, we were playing pickleball, and Corbin was like, hey, where's the TurtleBox? So it's not just for fishing. It's for anything you do. You got to get a TurtleBox audio for your family adventures, anywhere you're going, whether it's out on the water or just on a beach trip or in a mountain, any kind of trip. You're hanging out outside. Nothing better than having a TurtleBox audio, blast some tunes, or listen to an episode of Dazzle Fly Podcast. So get your TurtleBox audio today at turtleboxaudio.com.
Yeah, check them out and get whatever type of custom speaker you want there at turtleboxaudio.com. And we're back with Mr. Al White, and Al's been telling us all kinds of great stuff about smalley fishing there in Indiana, and we've talked a little bit about what has just kept you connected with fly fishing and some of the great places that it's taken you already. And Al, also one of the reasons we want to have you on the show, you mentioned the fact that you're a father to three great kids.
Yep.
And so just would love for you to speak to that a little bit about, you know, your relationship with them and what that's been like for you, maybe with this whole fly fishing thing. It sounds like they're maybe not into it as deep as you are, but it sounds like you've also used fly fishing as a means to provide some really great experiences for them.
You know, it's one of those things too, because no, they're not into fly fishing. We, you know, we've had the good fortune when we go on vacation, though, certainly when they were younger too. Say we go down to Florida in the Destin area or something like that, to get a guide and go offshore and do some fishing. So they've all done that. And it's interesting, as my son AJ, who just graduated from University of Cincinnati this past May, he's now asking me to go fly fishing, because before I was asking him and he was like, I don't think I want to do it. So we're going to make that happen in 24, because honestly, there's nothing I would like more than to have, you know, that kind of bond with him. And frankly, for him to be able to hopefully experience what I've experienced through fly fishing, I think it could only be, you know, a win for him if he was to, you know, have that kind of experience that I've had. And, you know, so there's AJ, and then I have two girls, Alexa and Rebecca. I don't see either one of them fly fishing. Maybe Alexa at some point in time. I will say this, they do all like the outdoors. You know, they get an opportunity to go to Colorado from time to time through their mother, and they really do enjoy being out there in the outdoors, hiking and things of that sort. So I'm thankful for that, because I do think that's a good thing, again, for everybody, as you get back to that research, even though it's not necessarily moving water. But I do think there's something really beneficial about spending some time outside, if you will. You know, when I think about my kids, again, you know, I told you guys, I think one of the things I think it's important, you know, is to give our kids experiences. I was, you know, listening to your podcast with Eli, and I think is his daughter's name, Isla, I believe, the father and daughter. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, you know, here they kind of got off the grid, or, you know, took a camper for a year or better now. And what an experience, you know, for their children. And when I think about that, because look, I'm all about traditional education. My mother was a teacher, you know, and so I appreciate that. I've come up through, you know, the public school system and so forth. But I'll tell you what, that experience they're getting, you know, the traditional education could not teach them what they are getting out there. Now, again, that doesn't mean that they don't, you know, go and take the traditional route as well. But I think it's really about the combination of being able to have both, right? Those different experiences. And so, you know, for me, I think it's important that we provide our children with different experiences, because that's where I believe they get the opportunity to kind of dream and see, you know, kind of what's out there and what the possibilities, you know, really are for them as they think about, you know, their next steps or whatever, you know, that may be. So we have to give them exposure. I just think it's super important as we bring them up. I think, you know, the other thing too, and this is where fly fishing comes in to play, is, you know, we've got to let our kids fail. And what better a teaching ground in my mind, or a training ground, right, than fly fishing? Because more times than not, right, we're not catching fish. You know, you've got to be patient, and you got to be comfortable with that. And so I think, you know, again, if I had to do all over, I'd have introduced all of them to that. You know, just getting caught up in trees and all that stuff, you know, that teaches you how to problem solve as well. So there's all these different connections, I think, you know, that you can, you know, pull from with fly fishing. I think then just the other thing I would say too is to be present. And I've listened to you guys talk about your children and a couple of the other guests, to be present and be in the moment, you know, as a corporate guy, and I was a corporate guy through and through. I missed out on some of those opportunities through travel, making, you know, decisions to go to this event versus maybe, you know, a game or a dance recital or whatever the case may be before. And, you know, I look back at that and say, God, that was just the wrong decision to make. Work is always going to be there, you know, and there's so many factors that come into play as you think about your own career and stuff, but you can't get that time back with your children. So it's one of, you know, the things that I, you know, I would sit here and say that I regret that at times I just, you know, I made the wrong decision. So, you know, time truly does fly when people tell you that. And, you know, it seems like it was just, you know, a couple of years ago that, you know, they were just, you know, adolescents in middle school. Now here they are, you know, all three adults and, you know, living out on their own and doing what they're supposed to be doing and contributing to society. And that's a cool thing. But there are just, you know, some things that I missed out on. So I would encourage, you know, all the listeners, you know, all the dads out there and the moms, too, that are listening, man, just be in the moment, be present, you know, put them first always.
For sure. Well, I appreciate everything you said there, Al. One thing I want to circle back to is I think the fact that I think you said your son, AJ,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like you've done it right, though, even with him, of not trying to force him into something. You've exposed him to this thing that you love, and this is what you want, right? You want him coming and asking.
That's right.
I mean, that's a win right there.
That's right.
You know, you don't want to be the one that's dragging them to do it. You want them to be the one, especially now that he's an adult.
I was about to say, now at that
now
point in his life,
wanting to come back,
that's
and
right,
hang out with his dad and want to spend time with you, that's special. And so I mean, I know you said, you know, you weren't intentional maybe in some ways that you wanted to be, but you've done something right. I mean, yeah, anytime they're that age, and then that, in my opinion, that's the you know, that's the win for parenting, is when your kids want to hang out with you when they don't have to.
That's right. You're right.
I mean, that's kind of what we shoot for. You know, and our kids are young right now, but my wife and I talk about that already. The fact that we hope that one day when our kids don't have to be with us, they still want to be with us.
Amen to that.
Who wants to do this kind of stuff, man? I mean, that's pretty great.
Absolutely. You know, for me, honestly, and what I'm hoping is, you know, that he has some good experiences out there, and that, you know, we've got the next, you know, 20, 30 years of, you know, taking trips, right, you know, multiple times a year, and being able to spend some quality time together in the outdoors. There wouldn't be anything that would, you know, honestly give me more pleasure than that. But that also goes for my girls, too. I don't want them to think this is just about, sure, AJ. If they listen to this, Rebecca and Alexa know that I'd love for you guys to fly fish, too. So,
for sure. I mean, you get them down to the Bahamas on a bonefish. I mean,
yeah, sure.
Come on.
There it is.
Like, that's the world. Like, a little beach time, a little fishing with dad.
Exactly. Exactly.
That is it.
So, Al, one other thing we had talked about off in our kind of Instagram messaging back and forth was, and it's something that me and Caleb talked about in this year of the podcast, and as we continue to grow our show, something we hope to do. We've had a couple moms, multiple moms on the show this year that we were trying to get. We've had some dads from the African American community, and that was important to us. We want to continue to meet more and more people. I think when you see, you know, most, we talked to this with our buddy from Colorado, most of your Orvis ads are, you know,
middle-aged
white dudes out there with a fly rod, right? That's kind of what you see. And that's important for us that we continue to kind of grow that community. And I know it's very important to you. We spoke to it. So what does it mean to you to be a black guy who fly fishes, man?
Yeah. Now, you know what? Let me say this too. First of all, it is one of the things that, you know, attracted me to your podcast. After getting the invite, I obviously went out and started listening. And the fact that you had that focus, I've got to tell you, you know, as a black man, African American or whatever, I appreciate the fact that you guys recognize the importance and the power of diversity. And so, you know, again, a shout out to you guys. And I just appreciate the thought that goes behind that, of you guys wanting to be an inclusive podcast, to be honest with you. You know, this is really interesting. So I was working out this morning, and another reason why I need to update my bio, because I was an avid runner until my second knee surgery. And so I don't get to run near as much as I like to. I still, you know, stay pretty active, but I'm not running near as much. So you guys have been a good reminder tonight of updating my bio on Instagram. People are going to think I'm just a stone cold liar here in a second. I still do drink bourbon, though. Good bourbon. I am.
There you go.
But I was watching a YouTube video. I love to get out there and watch YouTube videos, you know, thinking about some of the different destinations and stuff like that. And there was some guys that were hitting the flats in Mexico, chasing bones and permit. And there was this older white guy out there. And he talked about the fact that what's been really cool for him as it relates to fly fishing is that it really doesn't. They don't see kind of either race, creed, or color. He said something to that effect. So I'm paraphrasing him. And then my part was, yeah, because it really is just about kind of slinging that fly, right? And chasing fish and taking in the whole experience. And so when I think about why it's important to me from an African-American male, because I think that we have a lot to offer to this sport, right? As we move forward and this sport needs to grow. And I can't remember if you were talking to Al Perkinson or maybe it was Eli, but just talking about the power of diversity and what that means. I think as we can bring different perspectives in, whether it be, you know, a woman, an African-American male, a Hispanic male or Asian, whatever, it doesn't matter. But the power of, you know, us having these differences culturally or whatever the case may be, that only makes this sport better as we look for it to grow. And so that's the way in which, you know, I kind of think about it. For me, I'll be honest with you, it's about getting everybody into this sport that I can, you know, and I talk to, you know, my buddies. I've got a close group of friends who we used to all work for the same company. And we've got a text thread and we actually talk about, you know, getting out and these folks happen to all be Black. And, you know, I've talked enough about it that they're now all interested and we're talking about taking a trip somewhere to do some fly fishing. Right. But as much as I talk to them about it, I could be talking to a female colleague at work or I could be talking to somebody I ran into at the store about my love for the sport and why I think they should join it too. So, like I said, I think I'm probably one of the best advocates out there for this great sport that we have.
Yeah, I mean, once it gets you, it's sometimes really what gets me sometimes is the people who you think are like you because they have on like a Sims shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe they're wearing like a Orvis pullover, and so you're like, "Oh, you fly fish?" Or you know, you see something, and then they're like, "What are you talking?" And you go into this long, and they kind of look at you like, "What are you talking about?"
My wife bought me this shirt.
Yeah, I know. Like, this was on sale.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, sorry, you know, you had me with that.
Can I say this too? Because as I reflect back on my time, especially as it relates to fly fishing, I think what's been really cool is everybody that I've run into, regardless of their background, you know, race, gender, whatever, they've just been welcoming into the sport. You know what I mean? It's kind of trippy to me. And I wish, you know, that we could replicate that behavior out into, you know, the broader society, if you will, because there's something, I don't know what it is, I can't explain it, about fly fishing. But, you know, as I meet somebody else that, you know, is into the sport, I mean, they're just open, right? They're welcoming. They're going to give you information, you know, hey, do you want to fish? You know, and this could be a white male in their 70s, right? That we just sit there and end up having this great conversation. Or I can remember being out on the White River chasing smallies. And the guy, we started talking, we had both kind of wrapped up. And, you know, the next thing you know, he's, you know, cracking open a beer and he asked me if I want one. This guy doesn't know me from anywhere, you know, but that's, I think, kind of the generosity that you get in the sport of fly fishing in that community, for whatever reason, it really does, in my mind, break down a ton of barriers. And so, again, that's the power of fly fishing.
I know we don't talk politics on this show, but maybe it should be a requirement. Have to be a fly fisherman, a fly fisher, angler for it. Maybe that
there
would
you
cause
go.
Some of the, maybe it would break down some of the
break down some of those barriers out there in the exactly. world.
Yeah, for
we
sure.
need it, man. For sure. I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you.
I mean, I think we see that because when we're on the river, all that other stuff just, I mean, it matters, but it's not primary.
That's
and,
right.
It's almost like it takes something like that for us to realize that again. We actually should want what's best for each other across the board, and not just when it comes to where to catch the next biggest fish.
But
I think fly fishing gives us some means for doing that. And, you were talking about it, Al. We've seen that across the board. You know, I think fly fishing at one point, and it is so far removed from this now, I believe, at one point it was a very the attitude for a lot of people, especially initially getting connected to the sport, was a very elitist type atmosphere. And that is just continuing to disappear. We see that across all aspects all over the country, really, of it really being open to a to anyone.
Yeah, and, I agree.
That's a wonderful thing.
I agree.
And I think, like you said, because I think people are finally, and maybe it just took the world getting crazy enough for us to realize that we needed something like this for that balance, like you were talking about at the very beginning of this episode, kind of bring it full circle for that peace that we all need in our own lives.
For sure.
Well, Al, we can't thank you enough. Me and Caleb talk all the time. I think you said this off air. You know, you were like, well, you've had some really cool guests on the show. Well, we love getting to talk to people like us, fathers who enjoy what we enjoy and love to fish in different parts of the country, which is awesome for us to learn about. Just want to let everybody know, Al_White_70. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. You can go follow Al on Instagram and check out some of his just awesome footage that he gets from some of his fishing adventures. And Al, we really appreciate you joining the show. Is there anything else before we get off here?
Just want to say a big thanks to Caleb and Josh for having me on. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed it. And I hope that we get an opportunity to actually wet some lines together at some point.
Well, that's what I was thinking. You were telling that story about the being in Africa, hiking and sliding down trails. And if you ever want to do that again, if you like that, we have that opportunity in our backyard. So it's about 5 minutes up the road here. We could make that happen for you anytime if you're in the area.
We need to make it happen. You guys are in North Carolina, right? Is that right?
That's correct.
All right. I've got some friends and family like folk down there, so we're definitely going to make that happen.
Sounds great. Al. Well, Al, again, thanks for hanging out with us, and thanks everyone for checking out this conversation with Mr. Al White. And until next time, tight lines.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dads on the Fly podcast. We hope this episode has inspired you as a parent or an angler.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please check us out at dadsonthefly.com. There you can subscribe to our email list and find out all the things we got going on here at Dads on the Fly.